This is an Audio Wool original.
This week's episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Spring-Heeled Jack Coffee. You need great coffee. Jack delivers. Visit springheeledjack.coffee.
I did not. Will you be nice? Do you know how much I hate that you won't see anything romantic with me?
It's not that I won't see anything romantic with you. It's just we have different ideas of what constitutes romantic.
Tell me what's romantic.
I don't know, like that movie we watched a while ago where there was that guy that had the machine gun in the second floor window.
Totally. Yeah. All right. She's leaving? Oh, she's taking those off.
Die Hard. The first one.
Die Hard. Oh, Jesus. Come on. Where are you going? Are you taking off your wedding ring?
I No, it's going to keep coming. I mean, you're just going to have to deal with it throughout. I got everything that's there now, but it's going to regenerate. That's what happens.
Isn't there something you just like cram up there?
Go away.
It is Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron. After receiving a letter from a mother whose son was snatched up by a wolf pack, an author and expert on the subject heads to Alaska to help. Is he prepared for what happens next? I'll answer that now. No. Find out why tonight as we review Jeremy Saunier's chilly thriller, Hold the Dark. And body hair howling and shredded clothing, let's shed some moonlight on lycanthropy.
Oh, God.
It's werewolves in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I'm joined tonight by an under the weather, Kelly.
Hi.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
I'm sorry.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Well, you said a minute ago that your sickness moved into your eyes.
Do you see my eyes right now?
Well, unless you have the strain illness, I don't think that's how it works.
Can you get colds?
Pink eye.
Colds get into your eyes, don't they?
No.
Don't colds go into your eyes?
No,
sometimes?
Your eyes get dried out because
you are thinking of spiders.
Okay.
Well, I cried myself into a cold. Yes.
We don't need to talk about that.
Okay, but I did.
Yeah, you posted about it on the Facebook group, and that's. I think we gave you some wiggle room on that.
Oh.
I had to hold
Stop!
One. Yeah.
We're talking about A Star Is Born.
Oh, God, you guys, it's so good.
You've got 8 seconds.
Okay, it's the saddest movie that ever was, but it's really good. And I cried for so long after seeing it that it gave me a cold.
That's enough. We won't talk about that anymore. And I'm sorry about your cold. And I hope it resolves itself soon. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, thanks.
It's October.
I know it's October.
And because of that.
I started Christmas shopping last week.
Stop it. Things are going crazy at FrightDay.com. The writers are doing such an amazing job. They've outdone themselves.
They're doing an incredible job. They have to be neglecting their real jobs, right? I can promise you we don't pay enough to make up for the loss when you get canned, guys.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Alex, Maggie, Felicia, Elizabeth, Abby, and Jacob. Articles like Elizabeth is breaking down the Final Destination franchise from work. Wow, okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Are you okay?
Just allergic to Final Destination.
From worst to best. Maggie wrote a great article, A Scare and Compare, about the
Carrie's.
The Carrie's remake in the original. The whole gang got together and did 13 lessons learned from horror films.
Favorite top 13 yet.
We're getting daily reviews. We've got the weekly watch this week. I guess as we're talking now, they just did a live stream about Tragedy Girls.
Amazing.
A modern meta masterpiece. So keep your eyes at FrightDay.com.
And thank you, writers.
Yes.
Seriously.
You guys are honestly incredible. Thank you so much for everything you do.
I can't handle how sick you sound.
Like, look at my eyes right now, you guys. Like, I actually don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to open my eyes.
We'll find out.
Okay.
But it's not just them that's in the spirit. I went on a couple excursions this week.
You did.
I did.
You're showing that lovely lady all the spooks around.
Near and slightly far. Okay. Come on. I'm trying to tell a story.
I can't help it. It's coming
just
out.
Just wipe. Don't blow.
It tickles. Okay, go ahead. They're good
stories. Garnet Ghost Town. It's located on the dirt Garnet Range Road, 11 miles off the highway,
abandoned, if you can believe that. That's what a ghost town means.
They all share that characteristic. There's just nobody there.
That's the definition of a ghost town. But, there, I thought there would be no ghosts there, but we show up about 5 o'clock, encounter a gentleman, a tall, white-haired man with a beard and a vest that was a little too small for him. He's locking up the 3 main buildings, and I'll will post pictures of this place.
Yeah, it shuts down, guys.
In the show notes of this episode of FrightDay.com. He says, oh, hop on in. We're just about to lock up, but you drove this far out here. I want you guys to check it out.
Nice. Have you never seen a horror movie?
Well, he does kind of resemble the character that I resemble right now. I'm wearing a thermal and some overalls.
And knit cap.
The old, I wouldn't go down that road.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say.
Road kind of guy.
Cornelius. No, y'all want to turn right around.
But this guy, kind of the opposite of that. Super gentle, very nice, soft-spoken guy, tells us the history for a few minutes, and then he pauses and goes, well, but I probably told you more than you wanted to know. And then I look over at Jamie, and we both go, no, keep going. And then he proceeded to go to the next 2 buildings with us and tell us everything about it.
God, I love people like that.
The nicest gentleman.
Awesome. There's another even ghostier town.
Oh, yeah?
On the way to where you guys were that's just foundations, basically.
Oh, really?
There was a mining camp that predated.
Is it Kelowna?
I think Kelly's right.
Okay. So after he gave us a little tour, he asked us where we were from, and I said I was from Missoula, and she said she's from New Jersey, and he was really excited. He's like, oh, we don't get many New Jerseys around here. We started a fire in the visitor center, and you should pop by and sign the guest book.
Oh.
We proceeded to go up the hill and look at the cabins that they built, and then unfortunately, we're looking down the hill, and we see him close up. He looks at us and waves, and then he just disappeared.
Yeah, that happens in Garnet.
I mean, I assume he did. Of course he was a ghost host.
The strangest thing was he was telling us the story of the last resident of Garnet, who was a person who owned 3 of the buildings, but in his final days, he had moved into the kitchen of the hotel and set his bed next to the oven and just fed wood into the oven. That man's name was Frank, and so was the tour guide.
Interesting.
No, it wasn't. His name wasn't Frank. It didn't have a name on his thing.
Oh.
But it could have been.
It could have been.
It really could have been a Frank. He was very reluctant to tell me more about the details of the final days because I was like, well, what else does this guy do? What does he do other than feed logs into a thing? And also, I was curious to know how long it was until they found his body.
How long was it?
I didn't ask that.
By there, like sitting there by the wood stove?
I wouldn't do that. Like, things could go wrong very quickly. But I should also mention, Ted Gagan did a movie called International Playboy's first movie, Ghouls Gone Wild, and it was shot in Garnet.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, so.
I'm surprised he got permission to do that. It's not a national park. I guess it's a state park.
Well, no. We don't know that he did. It just said the movie was shot there.
He is a bit of a rebel.
Later that night, I went home, made some Jiffy Pop, and watched House of 1,000 Corpses.
Police have identified more victims and plan on more than just the 4 murder charges filed today.
Confirm earlier reports of cannibalism.
The building was a scene of ghoulish slaughter.
A large kettle on the stove which held boiled body parts.
Identified more victims and
killed even more.
Plan on more than just the 4 murder charges filed today.
Had sex with some of his victims before he killed them, and that he was also a necrophiliac.
Aw.
You ever seen this one?
Yeah, it's Robert Zombie.
Robert Zombie's.
So overrated.
No, it's actually not overrated. So good. It's been a while since I've revisited this film. It is the best written Robert Zombie flick. It's the best performance by Sherry Moon Zombie.
That's like...
All right, be nice. I truly think that this is a masterpiece. I don't know why it has such awful reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
You know, because it's an awful movie.
Great movie. Totally forgot how experimental it was. It's really an interesting movie, and I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it, watch it. What's wrong with you? And if not, revisit it this season, because it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
You know what was more fun?
What?
Heading over west to Scarywood.
God, you just had a week.
It was an adventure.
That sounds spooktacular.
Well, right. For people who don't know, this is an amusement park. It's normally called Silverwood, which is like a western-themed amusement park north of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. But this month, it's Scarywood. It's extremely haunted. There's ghouls and dolls and clowns.
And they go all out. It's extremely impressive. You're like, oh, well, you people in the Rocky Mountains are dumb hicks. No, like, this is pretty legit.
I mean, there's a new thing called the Pharaoh's Curse.
Ooh.
There's an archaeologist at the entrance. She's stuck there forever because you're not supposed to touch the remains or the gold. Turns out there's a bunch of mummies in this thing.
What?
Oh, wow.
In an Egyptian-themed horror maze? Yeah. There are mummies?
Mummies left and right. All over the place. Jumping out, popping out, yelling at you. Get out of my face.
So many mummy puns that I want to share, but I'm not going to.
If you think of one, let me know. Okay. Jesus, it is a nightmare in here.
I know. I'm sorry.
I also went to Planet Zombie, which is just a zombie outbreak kind of thing. But they're shooting real guns in this place with blanks far too loud.
Holy cow. That
disgusting.
It is so loud.
It was very loud. And then we moved to my favorite attraction, a little place called Blood Bayou.
Oh, I remember that. That was there the only time we went there.
I watched that in my blood run of movies. I'm thinking of Feast or Lake or Shark or Death.
That's what it was. Or all the other blood movies. Super scary haunt. So scary that I decided to record audio of us entering it.
Really?
And this is the line of the restroom, right? She loved it. Thanks.
Entering this unhallowed
the front.
By yourself
with
the next group.
Oh, by ourselves might be fun. Yeah, let's do it. That'd be great. What a sweetie! Welcome to Blood Bayou. Yeah! I saw it. I had to see it. Look at how I'm coming.
No. No.
Poor Jamie.
All right, so that's a lot of fun. Are you okay? You're reading your medicine?
Yeah.
The ones that you just squirted into your eyes, those are nasal drops. You know,
I was just looking at the back. It actually says it's only for use in the nose. Do not spray into eyes.
All right, so that's good. Also, Blood Bayou. A lot of fun.
I kind of wish I could get Sam to go there again. But
well, I think you will. You just got to quit having youngsters.
No, it has nothing to do with
it. Too many humans. It was so well done. I was really surprised at the quality of the haunts.
That's number 2 of 4 spooky things we're doing this year. We've got Telluride Horror Show right around the corner. Leaving next week for it. Should be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun.
Then coming back and we're heading to the coast.
Ugh, it's going to be great.
Just another quick tease for that. Lots going on. A bunch of it's going to be exclusive for Patreon patrons. So come hang out on the coast with us, right?
Yes.
I guess.
Okay.
Let's see. We finished watching Castle Rock, which was fun. Conclusion of that, which everybody else has seen a while ago, was actually a really fun conclusion.
I'm still in episode 3. I know that the finale was very divisive.
I don't know how you could be divided about it. It was like amazingly good.
Into it?
Unless, I guess some people are stupid and maybe didn't understand it.
I found myself just not caring enough to try to understand it.
Okay. But it's worth watching? Uh-oh.
Sam's really down on watching anything these days, you know, in the defense of all things. It was really, really well done. And I think episodes 9 and 10 were the 2 best episodes of the season.
Well, I will wrap it up.
It was very cool. I have to say, whoever wrote that show did a much better job of ending a show than Stephen King ever does.
This is incredibly true. The whole series was better than anything that Stephen King has written.
That's not true. Maximum Overdrive.
And then I also watched Hell House... LLC 2.
You're going to keep the LLC hush, huh?
It's just so stupid.
They're a limited liability company.
Well,
they don't need to be personally responsible for this.
So there were parts, I have to say, it started out real bad.
Okay.
Then it got better.
You're doing a really good job explaining what this is.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. I guess it's weird because you can't explain Hell House LLC 2 without completely spoiling Hell House LLC 1.
Kind of. Let's just say it's a continuation.
It's a continuation of the first movie. Like I said, in terms of plot, literally, it picks up on the surprise ending from the first one. And that's what it all springs forth from. So it'd be really hard to...
What is it? An investigation into what happened?
It's a spooky place and they're investigating it. The acting at the beginning made me feel like, oh God, I don't even know if I can sit through this.
Okay.
And then it definitely got a lot better.
The thing about about Hell House LLC, it was kind of a surprise hit. You know,
right.
It was distributed by a very small company. It sat under my radar because of that. When I finally did look at it, it's like, oh, wow, this is a standout film.
I loved it. So this was not as good as the first one, in my opinion. But by the end of it, it was definitely worth watching.
And it's currently streaming on Shudder.
It is only Shudder, I believe. Yeah, so that was kind of fun. The other thing I did this week is spent some time talking with our friend, Seth Breedlove.
Oh, Seth.
Actually, tonight, as we're speaking right now, though obviously people will be hearing this after the fact, his new movie, Bray Road Beast, is available on Amazon and other streaming platforms. Please, everybody, go check it out. As much as I love all of his Small Town Monsters productions, I
haven't done a bad film.
This is definitely the best.
Super fun.
Very dark.
It's amazing. I mean, Adam Wingard said that it was his best. Wow. So if you don't trust me, you guys, you can listen to Adam Wingard. I had a great conversation with Seth about his experience filming Bray Road Beast.
He was sleepy.
He was a little sleepy. He had just gotten back from filming his actually newest movie that we'll be seeing next year sometime.
He's
so
a very busy man.
He is very busy.
Very lucky to have him.
Yes. I'm still hoping one of these times I'm going to convert him from skeptic to believer, but it was a great interview. We had a really good time, and I'm looking forward to you guys hearing that.
The conversation with Seth Breedlove should be out now.
Yeah.
You got anything, Sam, or you been hanging?
Nope.
You got a haircut?
I did get a haircut. Been 5 months.
Oh, that's exciting. You look sharp.
Big deal.
While he's cutting his hair, others are growing more.
Yeah.
In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Yeah, for sure.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Werewolves. It's kind of crazy, guys, that we've been doing this show for, what, almost 4 years? We've never done werewolves.
182 episodes, brah.
Don't ever say the word brah unless you're talking about a brassiere. What was that?
Well, I got this is growing up.
Oh, God.
Ew.
Oh, my God. There you go. That was actually really on
to the stars.
Oh, okay, that's the only way. You do not mock him. We're trying to get him on the show.
All right,
Byron was not mocking him.
Man has always had a pretty complicated relationship with wolves. Stories of werewolves date back a couple of thousand years, but there's actually evidence that man has long believed in a spiritual power connected to wolves.
Of course.
There's a long history of the concept of men and boys eating dogs and wolves, sometimes even transforming into them, as an initiation ritual to become a man or warrior. Cultures from the Greeks to the Celts to Indo-European societies. Less than a year ago, anthropologists were working in the Russian steppes, which are mountains. They found something pretty creepy. Trigger warning for all of our canine lovers out there. They're in the Srubnaya culture settlement of the, not even going to try it, somebody who speaks Russian should.
Maggie.
Starts with a K. Sorry, Maggie. This is an amazing old settlement, okay, that dates to about 1900 BCE. They found remains of 64 dogs and wolves, which they were able to determine were ritually sacrificed and consumed. They actually published a paper in the Journal of Anthropological Archaeology about the find, and it's believed that this is the first physical evidence that proves there was a boy-to-man ritual involving wolves and dogs. David Anthony and Dorcas Brown of Hartwick College...
what a loser.
Brown.
Okay.
D-O-R-C-A-S. Dorcas of Hartwick College suggest in their study that this evidence of consuming backs up narratives that Bronze Age people performed initiation rituals symbolized by transformation into a dog or wolf. So essentially, they believe these kids would eat the wolves on their, you know, you're becoming a man, and they would turn into wolves.
It's a bar mitzvah.
Okay, that's... Like, I can't...
It's been a great 182 episodes, but Byron just did something we can never top.
Oh, my God. Beyond this creepy and disturbing physical evidence, there is nearly an endless supply of historical references to werewolf folklore in almost every culture. It's actually very cool. I'm going to touch on a few of them here. In Norse mythology, the legends of Ulfhednar, which is an old Norse term for warrior, come up in Haraldsvoi and Volsunga saga. They actually could be one of the primary sources for werewolf myths. Basically, these guys were vicious fighters close to a berserker. Sam, would you happen to know what a berserker is?
Yeah, berserkers are just generally people who would work themselves up into frothing battle rage and hurl themselves tooth, claw, and axe at the opponent.
Right, but berserkers were actually, according to some legends, supposed to actually take on characteristics of a bear. There was some type of like a spiritual, it's almost like a werewolf, but like a bear.
Is that where like berserker comes from?
Yep, like a werebear.
Gotcha.
Yep, these fighters were kind of the same concept, but they would dress themselves in wolf hides and channel the spirits of wolves, enhancing their own power and ferocity in battle. They were immune to pain, killed viciously in battle like a wild animal. Okay, closely associated with Odin. Hmm. So that's our Norse world. The story of Lycon in Greek mythology gives us another early example of werewolf legend. According to one form of the legend, Lycon was transformed into a wolf as a result of eating human flesh. So that was like his punishment for being a cannibal, which is interesting because, as you're going to hear in a little bit, a lot of those early werewolf stories are pretty akin to cannibalism. Sure. But probably my favorite is this Armenian story that there are women who, when they commit any kind of a deadly sin, something considered a deadly sin, are condemned to pass 7 years in the form of a wolf. A spirit comes to such a woman, brings her a wolf's skin, orders her to put it on, and then as soon as she puts it on, she turns into essentially a werewolf. So she has all these wolf-like urges that she can't put aside. She eats her own children.
Sometimes.
No. All she makes time? A meal of her own children. I mean, that was like the factual statement here, okay?
All right.
One by one, then of her relatives' children, according to the degree of relationship, apparently she goes in order. Finally, then the children of strangers begin to fall as prey. She wanders forth only at night. And doors and locks sprung open at her approach. So she had some type of a spooky supernatural power too. So like everything would...
She's like a walking key fob.
Yes, that as well.
Did you find yours?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good.
Somebody nice at the university turned it in. It was all so right. kind. When morning approaches, she returns to human form, removes her wolf skin. In these cases, the transformation was involuntary. And that's a lot of what we hear in current werewolf myths. You know, any of the movies we've seen, they really don't like being werewolves. It's very tortured. You know, they're very sad. They don't want to be turning into wolves.
Does a number on your wardrobe.
Yeah, it's like Professor Lupin, you know, in Harry Potter. I always felt bad for him.
I didn't know what that was, and now I definitely don't want
Side by side with this belief in involuntary metamorphosis, we find that the belief that human beings can change themselves into animals at will and then resume their own form. And this is more like a skinwalker situation, yeah, right?
An animorph.
Now, this is a bit of a teaser. As a tribute to my husband, because he loves werewolves ever so much, I'm going to dedicate a full report in October to the Serbian folklore between werewolves. Why not tonight, you might ask? Well, other than the fact we have a ton of werewolf stuff to talk about, it just so happens that the Serbian culture is incredibly cool, and their original word for vampire and werewolf are the same.
Interesting.
There have actually been some incredibly cool research projects done on this. We're going to be doing some discussion of Serbian werewolf empires.
And there's a Monster MASH joke in there somewhere.
I think there is. Yeah, it was actually good, Byron. Normally, I think yours are dumb. That was pretty good.
Thanks.
You know, you guys can eagerly anticipate that. The look of joy on my husband's face is overwhelming.
I am excited for this.
You do realize exactly I did that just for you.
And I'm excited for it. I like vampires and werewolves and Serbians.
You guys want to hear some fun stories about werewolves in like the 15s and 16s?
You're going to have to speak up.
Okay, you guys ever been to Bedburg? Bedburg, Germany.
I mean, not in the spring.
We're gonna start here. 1500s. We got a fella by the name of Stump. Perhaps Stumpy. For 25 years, he had allegedly been an insatiable bloodsucker who gorged on the flesh of goats, lambs, and sheep, as well as men, women, and children.
People tolerated that for 20 years?
25.
25 years.
Which is like three lifetimes in the 1500s, right? Like people only lived to be about seven.
If they didn't die at birth.
He is one of the earlier serial killers. Okay, so Byron should take a special interest in him, especially because he was a cannibal as well.
Sick.
He gorged on the flesh of goats, lambs, sheep, men, women, and children. And then when he was finally threatened with torture, you guys want to hear about the torture?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You keep asking, like, I'm going to say no, and you're going to say it anyway.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a tangent, but he was stretched on a rack pretty brutally.
Oh, I hate stretching.
Upon that stretching, really couldn't take any more. So even though he had done a lot, he couldn't apparently take extreme rack stretching like some people in the Middle Ages could. He confessed to having practiced black magic since he was 12 years old, and he claimed that the devil had given him a magic belt or girdle which enabled him to metamorphose into the likeness of a greedy, devouring wolf, strong and mighty, with eyes great and large, which in the night sparkled like fire.
Oh, no, it's a twilight.
That's poetic.
A mouth great and wide, with the most sharp and cruel teeth, a huge body, and mighty paws. And then when he removed the belt, he transformed back to his human form. So this is a willing transformation, right? So he's putting on the belt to transform of his own accord. Also, in my wolf research, I discovered that that is one of the common threads about how some people say you can transform into a werewolf is with this belt. you wear a belt that's made of like wolf hide or wolf hair, and you have to wear it against your skin. Turns you into a wolf.
Shave.
That sounds horrible. Hair. Sounds like
I'm
my eyes.
Very uncomfortable. Almost like being stretched.
Yeah, almost like being stretched. Okay, so not only was he accused of being a serial murderer and a cannibal, he also had an incestuous relationship with his daughter, who was sentenced to die with him. The worst. So your dad rapes you, so you have to get executed with him.
It's a daddy-daughter death.
Mm. Oh, God. He also had a relationship with a distant relative, which was apparently considered to be identical to having a relationship with his daughter. It was all incest at the time, so
gross.
In addition to this, he confessed...
Horrific for that.
Right. Also confessed to having had intercourse with a succubus sent to him by the devil. So here's the execution. On Halloween in 1589...
And I do have a woodcut of this execution.
It's a good one.
In the episode show notes.
His daughter and mistress were both killed on the same day. They couldn't find the succubus, so the succubus didn't suffer the same fate.
Because it wasn't real.
Well, you know. He was put to a wheel where flesh was torn from his body in 10 places with red-hot pincers, followed by his arms and legs. Then his limbs were broken with the blunt side of an axe head to prevent him from returning from the grave before he was beheaded... And his body was burned on a pyre.
Wait, bones were broken before or after death?
Before.
Wow.
Blunt side of an axe head.
Yeah.
Then he was beheaded. And I assume at that point he's probably dead.
Yeah.
And then his body's burned on a pyre.
That's your Michael Myers.
Well, that's true.
We're going to be talking about that later.
Yeah, you bet.
This month.
Yeah.
His daughter and mistress had already been flayed and strangled and were burned along with Stump's body. As a warning against similar behavior, local authorities erected a pole with the torture wheel and the head of a wolf on it. And at the very top, they placed Stump's severed head.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the Wikipedia version,
that
guys.
That is a great story.
You know, not even super explicit.
Things were different back then.
Well, I mean, Americans at this point were messing around trying to get rid of witches, but the Europeans were much more into getting rid of werewolves.
Well, there's a U.S. metal band named Macabre.
Macabre, yeah.
They recorded a song about Peter Stump called The Werewolf of Bedburg. All around Bedburg and get out in the German countryside.
There you go. That's what he is. Was.
And there's a band called The Other that recorded a song called The Werewolf of Bedburg.
We'll need to start putting new names on those songs.
I think The Other toured for a long time with the new Misfits.
Really?
And then there's a direct-to-video
the
called
Fits.
Big Top Scooby-Doo used a portion of the woodcut in the movie.
But Big Top Scooby-Doo.
But they used no mention of
that
stuff.
Is awesome.
Wow.
Scooby-Doo's
they fit that
amazing.
In there. The real-life grimness.
So we've got another town in Germany, this time 1685. Town called Ansbach. Large wolf terrorizing everyone, right? So they think that it's a reincarnation of their late and cruel Burgermeister Meisterburger. Did you know that Burgermeister meant mayor? I was so excited when I was doing this research. I didn't know that. And the only Burgermeister I have a reference from is Santa Claus is Coming to Town, one of those awesome claymation specials.
Why do you act like this is relevant?
It is relevant. It's Burgermeister. I guarantee you.
I don't even know what that means.
Hold on.
I
Everyone listening, if your reference for the word Burgermeister is that show, that Christmas special, I want you to send a message to Sam and Byron in some way letting them know. Because this is the kind of stuff they tell me I'm wrong about.
This kind of stuff I cut out of a show.
Stop it! So apparently his recent death, nobody was sad about at all, and they think that he came back from the dead.
Let's rewind a second. You said Burgermeister Meisterburger?
Well, it's technically just Burgermeister.
Well, let's straighten this whole thing out just a little.
So they thought that their Burgermeister had been reincarnated as a wolf because he was really pissed off that nobody mourned his death. So during an organized hunt, the locals succeeded in driving the wolf from a nearby forest, chasing it down with dogs, and it leapt into an uncovered well for protection. Poor wolf. Trapped, the wolf was slain, its carcass paraded through the city marketplace. Now, in this case, it seems pretty clear that it was just a wolf.
It's a wolf, a big
right?
wolf.
But they decided to dress it in man's clothing. After severing its muzzle,
That's
the crowd
a goof.
Yeah, the crowd placed a mask,
wacky
wig, and beard upon its head, giving it the appearance of the former Burgermeister Meisterburger. And the wolf's body was then hanged from a gibbet. Sam, what's a gibbet?
It's a...
I knew he would know what this was.
Any kind of a structure for hanging a person alive or dead and displaying them. Like sometimes it was a cage or gallow, just a inverted L shape that they would just hang the body from.
I spoke a little bit about this a couple months ago. About a cage thing that a pirate was put in.
Yeah, and it's really terrible. It's like a terrible, terrible punishment.
Well, he was dead at this point. This was the wolf. But they did hang it there for everybody to see. And then they preserved it and put it on permanent display at a local museum.
It must have been really funny.
I don't think it's funny. I feel really bad for the wolf. Oh, God.
Tourists that are just driving on by ever since the freeway went through. This may get them to stop and spend some of their dollars here in town.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. Yeah, so that's the Meisterburger wolf.
It's a Burgermeister?
It is a Burgermeister.
So call it that.
Paris, 1500s. There's this Taylor fellow. Now, what's interesting is his name is lost to history. Nowhere can we find what his actual name was. He's just referred to as this Taylor. It was December 14th, 1598, when a seemingly common tailor from Chalons, France, found himself in court facing numerous crimes. So in his tailor shop, he apparently would repeatedly lure children in, capture them, torture them, abuse them, slice them open, and then eat them. Then when he stopped being able to get as many victims as he wanted that way, he decided he was going to go out into the woods dressed like a wolf. Now, here's where reports differ. Some people say he actually turned into a wolf. Other people say that he just dressed up like a wolf. Regardless,
why does he think there's more children in the woods?
Well, I mean, Red Riding Hood, I mean, it's a thing.
Where do kids come from? The woods.
Okay.
The tailor was eventually arrested when people started investigating where the hell all the kids were going, and they broke into his shop and found essentially a giant vat with a bunch of body parts in it.
Gross.
The range of murders is pretty wide, and unfortunately, because it's such a long time ago, it's hard to narrow down any better than this, but he did confess to somewhere between 10 and 48 murders.
That's a range.
I know, yeah. They really quickly found him guilty. It was very easy. He wasn't apparently ashamed or sad about any of it. He was sentenced to burn at the stake, which was interesting because this was something that was typically reserved for people who actually were supernatural creatures of some sort, whether they were werewolves or witches or whatever.
This is kind of like a significant first step in the persecution of werewolves.
Yeah, well, and this guy was pretty bad. I mean, he never apologized, never pled for his innocence. He just continued to like swear and yell and even taunt families of his victims.
Yeah. Was he a good tailor, though?
Difficult to say. He was known as the Demon Tailor.
Ironically, many of the people in the audience were wearing pants that he had made for them.
Oh.
Well, and this is what makes it even harder to research. The court, once sentencing was over and once he had died, they felt like all of the documents pertaining to the case were so horrible, nobody should ever read them. So this is kind of like Australia, right?
Sure.
And they decided that they should burn the documents to ashes, and that was it. You know, very little information remains, and that's why there's a lot more detail there. But
you know how people, when Kaepernick got that Nike commercial, started burning their shoes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be wearing the clothes of the Demon Tailor.
No.
That's a boycott I could get behind.
Yeah, I like Nike, though. I mean, the whole sweatshop thing is a problem for me, but it's kind of balances out now. I don't really know what to do.
New Balance is out.
New Balance. I don't like New Balance. I always thought that logo was weird.
All right, you've heard us talk about coffee in general and about Springy Hill Jack specifically on the show before, but now we can finally introduce this artisan roaster as a show sponsor. It took months of harassment and coercion, but Springy Hill Jack finally either lost the will to resist or just lost their minds and jumped aboard the caffeine-powered nightmare juggernaut that is Friday. Why did we stalk them like Michael Myers after Laurie Strode? It's not just because we operate exclusively on coffee. It's because Springy Hill Jack offers a menu of what we consider the best coffees we've ever tasted, combined with the ethics of a small, family-run business and the black magic that manifests when you have a genuine mad food scientist feeding the roaster. It's true. Springy Hill Jack offers single-source craft coffee at an affordable price. Their coffee starts at $10 a pound, and curated blends are all $12 a pound, which is insane, and we told them that. So you can enjoy the absolute finest coffees on pretty much any budget. Springy Hill Jack batch roasts these magic beans, and would love to work with you to craft a custom roast that fits your palate like a palette glove. I don't know. Fright Day favorite roasts include Black Phillip, Reanimator, The Hessian, and Experiment Number 5, which is my nameless favorite. But you really can't go wrong with any of them. Does summer got you down? Is it too hot to brew a pot? How about a smooth, mild, cold brew from specially selected single origin roasts? Those handsome devils at Springy Hill Jack drink it all day and would love to ship a kit or a jug of this cool treat to your shack. Fright Day started off as fans of Springy Hill Jack coffee and cold brew, became friends, and now we're partners. We buy it, drink it, and love it, and you will too. Check them out at Springheeled, that's HEELD, jack.coffee.
Tell him Friday threatened you. I mean, sent you. SpringHillJack.coffee.
Thies of Kalterbrunn. You guys know about him?
No.
Sam, how much do you know about Latvian culture?
Nothing.
Did you know that Latvia used to be Livonia?
Nope.
Well, that's good to know then. Now you guys know that. 1692. This guy was in his 80s. Now, hold on just for a second. That in and of itself.
1692 in your 80s?
Yeah, that seems to indicate he might have had some kind of a supernatural power.
Oh, deal with the devil. Yeah.
Nobody lives to be 80 back then. Like I said, people died when they were 7.
That's necessarily true.
Well, no, they didn't. They had to procreate first, but they died like as soon as they procreated.
Yeah.
Pretty much. He, kind of like our last Taylor fellow, proclaimed himself to be a werewolf and had no problem with it. He said that he had jumped right down into hell with other werewolves to do battle with the devil and his witches. If you hear that sentence carefully, here's what's interesting. He claimed that he was a werewolf for God.
He was battling the devil.
Yeah.
I'm on a werewolf mission from God.
Exactly. And he's saying that the other werewolves are all good guys too.
Hmm.
He actually referred to himself sometimes as a hound of God. He was put on trial. This is the part that I find very ironic and I don't understand it. The judges decided that he was guilty of trying to turn people away from Christianity. Which makes no sense.
Because literally everything that you did that wasn't reading directly from the Bible was turning people away from Christianity.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, but I feel like he's like, hey, I'm helping God out. There's also a pretty sweet woodcut of this fellow if you guys are looking into woodcuts for all of this.
Show notes. Lots of wood.
I love, cuts. I mean, I cannot get enough. Honestly, I'm not even joking. I love woodcuts, especially terrible, terrible 16th century woodcuts.
That'd be an art form I'd like to learn how to do. So, you know
who's getting a gift certificate for Christmas?
I mean, if there's a place that does it, that's what I'd do. It'd be great. It's kind of sad. So he wasn't killed, but instead he was flogged and then banished for life. Just kind of a bummer. The guy got kicked out and he was very frustrated because he felt like he had done nothing but positive things.
What was his crime again?
Trying to turn people against Christianity.
But he didn't do anything else.
No, he wasn't some guy that had like killed a bunch of kids, all right?
Yeah.
He was simply saying like, yeah, I jumped into hell, helped God, was fighting some witches and the devil himself.
Sounds like they got kind of annoyed by that.
Well, I think they might have.
Spouting off.
I think they might have.
Like, no, the church will handle this. The church we'll go fisticuffs with the devil. You, sir, are a werewolf, a jerk, and you are flogged and banished.
Kind of the linchpin in his trial. The judges asked him where the souls of werewolves went when they died. And he said, well, of course they go to heaven. And the souls of witches go to hell.
Everyone knows all werewolves go to heaven.
Oh, God, that movie is so sad. Don't talk about sad movies.
That was a Byron McCoy Disney drop.
Is it Disney?
Yeah.
So he tried to convince everybody werewolves are the servants of God, not the devil. Didn't matter. He was completely condemned. Very, very sad. Now, interesting religious historical researchers have said that this actually is one of the examples of kind of shamanistic traditions blending into Christianity. It obviously didn't go too well for him, but it's something that's been discussed quite a bit. It's about time we went to Italy. This is one of my favorite stories. So in the 1500s, in a little town, Pavia, Italy, there was an interesting werewolf case. This is a guy who, he had an interesting approach to his explanation for being a werewolf. I'm not saying that it wasn't used elsewhere, but this is definitely the only place I read about it. It did not work for him, as you guys will soon learn.
There's a trend here, isn't
yeah
there?
Well, he's a rich farmer.
He farms rich people.
Yeah. During the time that he was alive, there was a wolf killing a whole lot of people in the countryside, tearing them to pieces. And after a whole lot of trouble, they finally discovered that this actually was the farmer fella, not a wolf at all. And this farmer fella said, well, actually I am a wolf. The only difference between a natural wolf and me is that a natural wolf's hair grows outside and my wolf hair grows inside.
Okay. That's the worst thing to visualize.
Jeez.
Well, that's horrible. But then
talk
what they decided.
Ingrown hair.
So guess how they decided to try and figure out whether he was lying or not.
Open him up?
Yeah, they cut off his arms and legs.
Oh, I'd start somewhere else.
Well, you look in through the armhole.
And then he died.
No shit.
Yeah.
Huh.
So
I mean, wolves just aren't that big of dicks. Wolves don't go around killing lots of people.
Right. I know. That's the thing. And this is actually a huge issue because listening to a lot of this werewolf nonsense is part of why reintroduction of wolves has been very, very difficult. Unless, of course, you're going to stick to our fellow who was a hound of God, maybe this is why it never really took off in Italy quite as much as it took off in other places. But this is another story. It's the last historical werewolf story we're going to talk about tonight. And it happened in France again. France was big on the werewolves. This is going to be more up Byron's alley again, just to warn everybody. So
what?
Jean Grenier, 1603. People were freaking out in the Saint-Sever districts of Gascony, far southwest corner of France. There was something happening all over this countryside. Tons of little hamlets, little towns, and smaller villages. Kids were disappearing. Disappearing off of fields. They were disappearing out of the countryside. They were disappearing from the middle of town. There's even one report that a baby was taken directly from his cradle. Not Madeleine McCann. Different situation. Because werewolves were popular at the time, people were talking about, okay, is this a wolf? What's going on? What's going on? One evening, there's this girl, Marguerite Poirier. She was 13 years old, outside under the full moon. I don't know why she would be outside when people are getting kidnapped. She's only 13 years old. Of course, she was probably nearly at the end of her life, the age of 13. She says that she's attacked by this savage beast that looks like a wolf, but it was definitely a man. Then she says that another day she saw the same type of creature while she was watching cattle. Again, it was this beast that looked like it had fur, kind of like a giant dog, but it could walk on its hind legs. Mm-hmm. Apparently, when she was attacked, she saved herself from being bitten simply because she was armed with a stout iron pointed staff, which she kind of waved around. I don't know. Seems like kind of a lame werewolf. A 13-year-old with a piece of iron could fend it off. But
that was a traditional werewolf killer. The cane with a head of
silver. Had to have silver. We're talking about iron here, though. So. In what sounds like something out of a modern-day teenage crime story, this jackalope, 14-year-old Jean Grenier, starts walking around town bragging that he had attacked Marguerite. He could turn into a wolf, and if it weren't for her stupid stick, he would have torn her limb from limb because he'd already eaten three or four children. Needless to say, he was arrested.
Probably for the best.
Right.
Probably for the beast.
Where the story gets a little bit supernatural and folklory, rumor has it that he was the bastard son of a priest and that that had something to do with him turning into a werewolf. There was some, you know, turned away from God element to it. I'm not really sure.
The result of sin.
I guess directly, but the sin with a priest, I mean, it seems like it's a lot more fraught. He apparently was one of the werewolves that could put on a wolf's pelt and transform into a wolf with all of the power of a wolf. A willing skinwalker, I guess, as opposed to an unwilling werewolf. He was arrested, brought before the higher court, freely made a concession. Most horrible things, killed these children. Once Jean Grenier was arrested and put on trial, it came out that he actually was not the bastard son of a priest, but his father was Pierre Grenier, bit of a jerk in a neighboring hamlet, and he really hated his dad, so he ran away and was kind of making a living on his own. Through multiple things that this kid said in the trial, they decided that the father had actually intentionally turned the son into a werewolf. So they arrested the father, charged him with sorcery and werewolfism.
What?
Pursuant to Code 3-4 regarding the prohibition on werewolfism, we do find the defendant is guilty.
I mean, the kid's pretty smart, though, because so they bring his dad in to try his dad for these things that he's accused his dad of doing. While they're trying him, they ultimately learn that there's absolutely no validity to any of this, but the kid runs away. He makes his great escape. So our French werewolf, he was eventually caught, but the judge was, this is strange because this is like Middle Ages, right, guys?
Yeah.
So the judge was super nice and said, you know, because he was clearly not super intelligent and he was so young.
Didn't you just say he was a smart kid?
Well, I thought he was smart for escaping, but
okay.
The judge thought that he wasn't very smart, that he was going to be strictly enclosed in a Franciscan friary of St. Michael the Archangel, a house of the stricter observance at Bordeaux. That any attempt to escape would be punished by the gallows. That's kind of where he lived out his life.
Re-education,
he talked about, he talked about the wolves. He would sometimes act like a wolf. Who knows whether he was just some crazy kid or whether there was some truth to this, but there are some rumors about kids in that same home seeing him transform into a wolf over the course of his lifetime. So, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, all of these historical stories of werewolves, I think they're cool in terms of kind of an archetypal imagery that is present in most of humankind. And I don't know necessarily it connects to the veracity or falsity of current werewolf reports. That's a whole nother thing to get into, which I think we're going to do next week, talking about some modern cases of werewolf sightings. Yeah, I mean, we have to. It's werewolves, guys.
I was going
to
say, we didn't talk about Mikhail Popkov at all.
Don't you worry. We shall.
The werewolf of Russia.
Spoiler, he was not a werewolf.
1992 to 2010, he killed between 22 and 81 people.
Yeah, we've got a few to talk about next week. Now, talking about the historical stories of werewolves, we've got a few different explanations for what might have been going on. There's a fairly recent theory that was proposed. In Europe, there may have been something called ergot, caused a form of foodborne illness. It's kind of a fungus, and it grows near rye grains during wet growing seasons.
It's where LSD comes from.
Right. So it typically affects whole towns, or at least whole chunks of poor areas in towns, and results in hallucinations, mass hysteria, paranoia, convulsions, sometimes death. Don't do LSD. So some researchers have said, well, that's what was going on. Now, it's hard to imagine that a whole town would hallucinate the exact same thing, except for that one person who was hallucinating that they were a wolf. I mean, that seems a little bit crazy. Other researchers have said that conditions like rabies, hypertrichosis, which means you get really, really hairy everywhere, porphyria, which is an enzyme disorder that can cause hallucinations, paranoia. They thought that these things could be tied to werewolf beliefs. With the porphyria, there are some clinical features. If it's congenital, erythropoietic porphyria can cause features like photosensitivity. Mm. You also can get hairy hands and face. Your skin kind of chaps up and doesn't heal correctly. Your teeth can turn a reddish color. So all of these things could, you know, add to those symptoms and why somebody might think that they're a werewolf. There's also a rare mental disorder called clinical lycanthropy. This means a person truly believes that they are transforming into another animal, most of the time a wolf or werewolf, as lycanthropy, you know, the name would indicate, but it can be other animals. The same term is used. I don't know, reading through all of these historical accounts, it's hard to believe that there was one thing going on with all of them. I'm not saying that there were wolves there, that there were werewolves, that is, but I think it was a very scary time in general. There are definitely religious overtones to a lot of the stories, uncertainty and fear and poverty and
more exposure to wolves.
But a lot of the places, there weren't traditionally wolves there. So, I mean, that did make the stories a little bit more interesting. Some of them, the wolves were very clearly present and just wolves. Who knows? But these are some interesting combinations of circumstances. I don't know. Of all of the things that I love to believe in, I hate to say it, I don't think that there necessarily were werewolves running around back then.
What?
I'm sorry. Now, spoiler alert, the modern accounts of wolfmen, dogmen, Bray Road Beast, I find a little bit more credibility in.
Really?
Well, primarily because there's a lot more witnesses alive. There is some evidence. I'm not saying that I believe it, hook, line, and sinker, but I'm saying, you know, historical werewolves I can write off to, like, cool cultural folklore. You know, there's not much that we can go on to sink our teeth into, so to speak. But when it comes to current events, there's a lot more there. You know, whether it's the Michigan Dogman or the Bray Road Beast, there's going to be a lot for us to talk about next week. Not to mention our own Montana werewolf.
Guess we're doing it again next week.
We are.
Thank you so much for the report, Kelly.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Good work, Kel.
Pulled through.
My eyes are doing so much better.
I'm happy about that.
Thanks, guys.
But I guess we're not done with wolves quite yet.
Wolves aren't done with us, at least.
What do you say we review Jeremy Saunier's Hold the Dark?
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Hold the Dark is a 2018 American thriller directed by Jeremy Saunier from a screenplay by Macon Blair.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Macon Blair, the star of Blue Ruin, Green Room. He's a great actor, a good screenwriter and director as well. He did that I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. Great guy. Sam, could you share a little bit about this movie?
After the deaths of three children suspected to be killed by wolves, writer Russell Core is hired by the parents of a missing six-year-old boy to track down and locate their son in the Alaskan wilderness.
I love Jeremy.
I mean, Green Room.
Blue Ruin.
So many colors.
Murder Party?
Dark.
That's not a color.
Dark's a color. Murder's a color.
So if you haven't caught his early work, which is totally different than his current work.
And pretty funny.
Really fun little flick. Murder Party. Very busy man. He's working on True Detective season 3.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that.
Hopefully he can pull it out of the toilet it ended up.
Okay, it was not that bad,
Sam. But for now, let's focus on this flick, Hold the Dark. It's based on a novel called Hold the Dark by William Giraldi. Are you familiar with this book, Sam?
I actually am not at all.
Don't know anything about it.
Huh. Well, what I know about it is this is the first time that Saulnier has directed a movie that he didn't write.
Which is actually very interesting. I think we'll talk a lot more about that as this unravels.
Yeah.
Y'all want to start at the top?
Sure.
It's got an Alexander Skarsgård.
Ugh, it's nothing like a Skarsgård. Been watching so much Skarsgård this week. Watched him in this. Watched his brother as we finished up Castle Rock. Mm-hmm. Skarsgård-orific.
You do.
Skarsgård me timbers.
You're a big fan of a Skarsgård.
I do.
Is actually Pennywise. I mean, we've seen him in
True Blood,
but
I was gonna say in another horror movie,
Straw Dogs.
Yes, like Straw Dogs. Dogs.
Yeah, great. In this film, he's Vernon Sloane, the husband of Medora Sloane,
who is played by
Riley
Keough.
Mm-hmm. Do you know much about her?
I know that she played a really fun role in Lucky Logan.
Oh, really?
Logan Lucky.
Yeah, and I still haven't seen that.
God, it's so much fun.
I've heard it's great, but she is the reason that Jeffrey Wright is brought into this, who is playing a guy named Russell Core.
She's also Lisa Marie Presley's daughter.
Really? Didn't know that.
Yeah. She's the oldest grandchild of Elvis.
Medora calls this wolf expert, Russell Core, to Alaska.
Jeffrey Wright, who you may recognize as Bernard from Westworld.
Great actor.
Real
incredible.
Good.
Are you guys still watching that, by the way?
No, we're starting up again now that we finished Castle Rock.
Okay. He's a wolf expert. He writes books on wolves.
Right. And he also, it becomes very clear early on, which is nice because this goes along with what we were talking about in my story a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the wolves not being evil because obviously we're in a town now where the wolves have taken some kiddos.
Yeah, more than one.
Right. And he's trying to explain that they really aren't. Like, this isn't typical and wolves are not evil.
They're animals.
Right.
They can't be evil.
Right.
But the town that he arrives in is in the Alaskan bush and is not a good, it's a very grim, cold, dark place, impoverished.
About as remote can get.
Yeah.
And I remember a standout line, she says, Anchorage is in Alaska or something.
Yep.
Like
that, when he's talking about
his daughter his living daughter. In Anchorage, yeah.
Which is like, never mind.
Which is what?
That's what he says about Missoula.
It was a topical reference.
That Missoula is in Montana?
Yeah, he says that all the time.
That's very true. The tone of this movie, it's so flat and cold.
It's grim.
Yeah.
It's
real grim.
It's funny because it's almost like everything that the Russell character says is knocked down into the snow by Medora.
Right. And I find myself wondering, like, why the hell is he doing this?
Well, that seems like a good guy.
Yeah, he was compelled. There was something that was driving him
I would argue that as the movie goes on, there are motives revealed, not bad motives, but it becomes more clear, at least to me, why I think he was there.
Sure. So he agrees to help her and he is staying the night at her place, kind of bear witness to this very interesting moment.
She gets all naked and...
Well, she's taking a bath and muttering. What was she muttering? They've taken him, something like that.
Incantations. Yeah, muttering.
She put a real cool mask on, a wolf mask.
A wolf mask.
And then she got all naked and then she got into bed with him. That's a weird thing.
And you weren't wrong.
It was a strange moment.
But again, Russell does the right thing.
Sure, he's a good guy.
Medora's husband.
Hold on, didn't he? I thought he slept with her.
He slept in the bed with her. He didn't do anything with her. She tried to move his hands towards her and he just moved them away.
Medora's husband is in Iraq. So the time frame is like 2004 for this movie.
It's based.
Yeah. We see that he is both a good guy and a stone cold killer.
Wow. Well, but.
Okay.
The first killing that we witness him taking part in, he is having a cigarette outside of some kind of an abode in some kind of a Middle Eastern not happy place.
That was the second one.
It's the convoy. The
machine gun.
And then after that, he's in the city.
Well, yeah, but the machine gunning, they're like hitting enemies, whatever.
Well, I'd say that's not a whatever scene because I think it says a lot about him.
Shot a flaming guy that was out of the fight already with a 50 caliber machine gun.
I'd say that was a pretty significant scene.
He doesn't have trouble killing people.
No, and it shows his character is very cold and I guess a hardened soldier.
Like I don't know if it's his commanding, whoever the officer was that got out said, "You're a fucking meat eater, son."
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, guys. My takeaway from those scenes was he isn't, for example, his commanding officer, whoever it was, that took a selfie, like he was enjoying the death. Like that was really creepy to me. It seemed like Skarsgård wasn't necessarily enjoying it.
Yeah, I agree. He was just doing a job.
He was indifferent.
Yeah. Right. But see, then he witnesses this woman being raped and he really brutally stabs his fellow officer who's raping her.
I'm in the middle of hell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, man.
No, you're fine.
He stabs this his fellow officer who's brutally raping this woman.
I don't think it was an officer. I think it's just a soldier. I don't know.
Whatever he was.
One of the more interesting things is he doesn't kill him. He leaves the knife for the girl who was being raped.
To finish the job. Like, yeah. And I felt like...
At no point was he angry.
You know what I'd say is I think he lives by a code.
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, and that is shown later on in this movie once he gets back. And he comes back to some pretty horrible news that his son is taken by wolves.
Actually, he doesn't come back to that news. He comes back to the news that his wife had reported his son being taken by wolves. And thanks to Bernard...
It's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. The son was actually found in the family home.
Strangled.
And it appeared that she was the one that did it.
In a very graphic shot of a boy body in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Body bag. Cold.
When Bernard pulls the why do we call him Bernard? We can't do that.
No, we can't. So Russell.
We can call him Russell or Jeffrey, right? And when he pulls the plastic off of the boy, it's really grim. It's not a fun scene.
Yeah, I agree.
And Medora is gone.
Nowhere to be found.
Completely gone. Then we witness the father at the morgue with the body and talking to the police officers. And you can tell the police officers are anticipating that he's going to be very vengeful about this.
Yeah. I think he has a history.
They tell him they're really trying to assure him that they're going to get her. They're going to find her. But it becomes very quickly apparent he really doesn't want anybody to find her except for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he makes it harder to...
Yeah, because he kills all of them.
He kills
all of them.
Mortician. Right.
But he doesn't kill Russell, which I thought was interesting.
Russell left early. He went back to the hotel.
Or he said, you might want to talk to him. And he said, unless he can... And he says, can you raise the dead? And he says, no. And he says, then we don't have anything to talk about.
That's a heavy line. Russell heads back to the hotel. Vernon kicks this thing into high gear.
Yeah. I don't know that we should give away anything about that.
He has a very clear, close group of allies back in this very unhappy town in Alaska.
And I guess we need to maybe talk about how to interpret what the situation is.
Well, what I found to be interesting and confusing about the situation, and I still don't understand, is there seems to be a fairly understandably close cohort of Native Americans who have been dealing with some, you know, pretty horrific interactions from both the government and the local police. And, mm-hmm. you know, they don't seem to like outsiders, which again makes sense.
Sure.
They don't necessarily seem to like white people, which again makes sense. Uh-huh. But for some reason, Vernon's an insider with them. They almost follow him like a leader. The group of friends that he has there are...
I think their relationship with that group is still very complicated because their interpretation of what this group is also...
Yeah. And I don't know what it is either. I just thought it was interesting because they're clearly on his side, willing to take orders from whatever he asks them to do. There's obviously a history there that explains that. Now, my interpretation of that history is that they're all werewolves.
Of some sort.
Right.
Because what a werewolf is still up for debate, kind of.
Right. And I think, you know, later in the movie, we hear some interesting things that Skarsgård says about his childhood with his father and some things that were said about him. And I feel like there was something different about him from the beginning and that for whatever reason, he felt more of a connection to, you know, the cultural history of perhaps this group that he has become so close with than he did from his own people.
I mean, a history of them is kind of shown. I don't think it's explicitly deeply explained.
Right.
And that's one of my problems with this entire movie is it's very ambiguous.
I loved that
about it. It's interesting.
I loved that because I love that we can walk away from it with completely different interpretations of what the upshot was. You know, like I love that.
It's just unclear. And it's not because it's short, because it's a 2-hour movie.
I feel like I came to a pretty, not saying that this is the only conclusion a person could come to, but I feel pretty clear about what I think was going on.
Do we want to like maybe do a dead giveaways?
Sure.
It's time for dead giveaways. This is the point in the show where we potentially spoil a little bit of a movie. We'll try our best not to. Hold the Dark is available now on Netflix.
Watch it.
Yeah, check it out.
Watch it.
It's, I think, going to be even more fun to watch this in the winter.
Right, which we're getting close to.
Yeah.
There's snow in the mountains, B.
Tell me your interpretation of what's going on.
So there were a couple comments made along the way. One of the things Medora voiced to Russell was that Medora was very upset that Vernon had promised he would never leave her, and that he did. And there seemed to be something much more to that statement than simply like a lonely wife missing her husband in war. It was like there was a reason he wasn't supposed to leave her. And I think what's going on is they're both some type of if not full werewolf, some type of shapeshifter, and she doesn't have control over it.
But there's not a point in this movie where you see them as werewolves or wolves.
Nope, but I think her wearing that mask was indicative of something that was beyond her control.
Uh-huh.
I think she is blaming his absence for why something happened to the son. And I think when he comes back, he feels pretty similarly.
Well,
I think that his goal was never to hunt down and kill his wife. I think his goal was to find her because he knew he had screwed up by leaving and that this was something that was kind of bound to happen because he left.
Again.
Right. He knew who they were. This was a result of who they were. He was going to find her.
I just don't think it's fair to classify that as a werewolf. I mean, if you're representing like the idea of a werewolf, that's different.
But I think that they actually did. I mean, so there was a wolf that took kids, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I think there actually is a connection to that and these people. Like, I actually think there is some type of a metamorphosis transformation thing happening.
That's just never explicitly seen,
though. Completely agree.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it, though. So you could walk away from it with my like supernatural creature interpretation of it, or you could walk away with it with nothing more than a mental health interpretation of it, right?
Yeah, or like a inherited belief.
Right.
The way they act is different than,
they're weird.
Than people. They're very strange, and like I said, they're more focused on their personal values, I guess.
Right. You know, even trying to understand those is very interesting. But obviously, Sam's favorite scene, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by this.
This is a wicked scene.
That scene even is surrounding, you know, something going on that's much more than your average, hey, I'm angry and I've got a lot of guns and I'm going to try and shoot up authority. Like, there was something really significant going on there. But we probably should talk about weapons authenticity with that scene.
Sam's Weapons Authenticity Report.
I mean, a couple scenes. Do you want to start with the M60? Is that right?
Yeah. Chion is one of Vernon's local friends, and he lures the local constabulary to his home, where he opens up with a belt-fed machine gun from the second floor window and just lays waste. I mean, I think that's what would happen. I mean, I've never seen an M60 in action, but...
Is Donald the officer?
The sheriff?
Sheriff Marium?
Yes.
Yes.
I think Donald is my favorite character in this entire movie.
He was good.
Well acted, and the kind of sheriff you want in a town like that.
Yeah, and you see that as he tries to talk Chion down before the standoff. He takes his gun off and walks up to the front door and meets Chion and tries to reason with him, which... Chion has lost his daughter to wolves. He's obviously fed up with the systemic history of the locals' treatment at the hands of the government and of this outside authority. And he wants nothing to do with coming out. So he opens up, pretty much lays waste.
He was doing this as a favor to Vernon.
He was trying to tie the cops up for as long as they could to give Vernon as much of a head start on catching
Melora
as possible.
What brotherhood is there that would, you know, manifest itself in that way? I thought the interesting parallel there, a lot of people who serve in the military are pretty loyal to the people with whom they served, and there's a pretty close allegiance felt there. In showing Vernon's experience serving, I didn't feel like he had an ounce of allegiance to anyone there. Like, he felt nothing for the people he was with there.
It's all about his family.
It was all about his family back home.
Yeah.
So you guys want a knowledge bomb?
Yeah.
This is like super spoiler.
So, I mean, listeners at home.
Yeah. Like big, big spoiler.
Go okay. for it.
Medora and Vernon were brother and sister.
Did they say that in the movie or is that from the book?
It was implied in the movie. There's a photograph of the two of them as kids. And when Wright's character asks how long Medora has known the father, she says, I've always known him.
Oh my gosh, how did I not pick up on that?
And they look the same.
They do look the same, but I just assumed that that was because, like you said, they moved and he left.
They were both wolves.
No, they're a...
She had mentioned that he moved us up here and then left me here.
She said that the son, he'd left me here with a boy that wasn't well. Like, I wonder if there was some weird incest thing that the kid wasn't right because of that.
Well, this got more confusing. Great.
Wow.
I'll be up late thinking about that. M60 is a powerful gun.
Yeah. Fires 7.62 by 51 millimeter NATO round, commonly known as 308. The responding officers were armed with AR-15s and also
9mm pistols, I'd imagine.
Yeah, 9mm pistols and at least one 308 caliber HK-G3.
Pump shotgun?
There was the pump shotgun as well.
A little bit of everything.
The sheriff had an MP5 as well that he took in with him.
Yeah, you dug this scene, right?
I did.
Okay.
I liked it a lot.
I can see that.
To me, honestly, like the biggest thing that it said was how much Netflix believed in this movie to mm-hmm. throw that much at pyro and blood effects.
Just not a short siege.
No.
It was quite the scene. Really, really impressive stuff. Saunier does this in Green Room. He does the same kind of matter of fact, non-celebrated deaths.
Yeah.
And it's really unsettling. It's unflinching. He doesn't cut away.
It's the middle of day. There's no music. There's no...
It's kind of the same things I like about Bone Tomahawk. You know, when someone gets shot, it's not this dramatic whip pan or like tight zoom on what's going on. Yeah, it's really effective.
I found myself expecting during that scene, like, hey, it's the middle of day. Mm-hmm. Where's the help? Like, someone should be taking care of this.
That was all they had, and they were all pretty green.
Yeah.
Second weapons authenticity thing, I want to talk real quickly about taping over the muzzle of a gun. Russell's character did that before trekking out to, I guess, find the wolf pack.
Yeah. And I think it's possible that he, as a naturalist, didn't maybe carry firearms into the field with him when he did his research, mm-hmm. you know, writing, because he clearly had a bond with the wolves and was very reluctant to harm them. But putting the tape over the barrel in no way affects the accuracy, harms the gun or the user in any way. It'll just...
That's what I thought. But then when he falls down the mountain and the wolves catch on to him, he starts trying to pull.
Frantically pulling the tape off the barrel, and it's frozen and his hands are cold and he's got mittens on and he can't get the tape off.
And me, a guy who doesn't shoot guns on a regular basis, I wouldn't have thought that he would think that you can't shoot through tape. It's tape.
And honestly, other than the tape issue, which I said, he could have just been going on urban legends and that's entirely possible that his character was doing that. The gun that he had was a piece of garbage that I absolutely would not expect someone to have in those environments where the cold and potentially humidity, the rough conditions, and the idea that your life very well may rely on this firearm. It was a Ruger Mini 14, which is not something I would pick, like from personal experience. They're garbage.
Well, very interesting. I feel better about this movie having talked about it with you guys.
It's a lot to think about. It's a lot to talk about. I think it's one of the more cerebral movies we've watched this year. I really, really enjoyed it. I don't think it was necessarily what I was anticipating it would be, but I really liked it. I give Hold the Dark 7.9 blood crosses.
This movie was amazingly atmospheric. The photography was just spectacular. It was so cold. It droned in not a bad way at all, in a really hypnotic way. Kind of reminded me of some of my favorite black metal songs. Sure. I really liked Hold the Dark. Netflix did a great service to themselves by allowing Jeremy Saulnier to direct this. And I'm going to give it 7.5 hours of daylight.
Jeremy Saulnier is one of my favorite directors working right now. I love his original work. In adapting this, it did step back, but not by much. What he does best is working in quiet, and he displays that more so in this than anything else he's done. It's a cold, lonely movie. This is something that for me to fully appreciate, I would need to rewatch, and I don't think I'll mind doing that once the chill sets in.
That's a good February movie.
Yeah. That being said, the ambiguous nature of this film, it's going to kick me back a little bit. I'm going to give it a 6.8 side stabs. And those are our thoughts on Hold the Dark, which once again, available on Netflix everywhere. Check it out. And if you have done that, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. Leave a comment below this episode in the show notes at FrightDay.com. Tweet us at FrightDay on Twitter if you've got more thoughts than a tweet can handle. Why don't you send us an email, contact@frightday.com. Or if you just want to say hello, hello@frightday.com. That's fun.
Hello.
Or we could have a full conversation about this in the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/frightday or frightday.club. That's my favorite place. The only reason I have Facebook, because I sure as hell know it's not for looking at Facebook memories.
That makes at least two of us.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we've been friends for 8 years.
Oh, I don't care
at
all.
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
I don't know how long in the real world, because that doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. On to more important things. Instagram, we have it. Why don't you DM us on there?
Woo!
At Frightday. It's not like it's owned by the same people. Also, at the same time, like our pictures, because sometimes we post them there. And if you like the show and want to help us make it even better, take a look at shop.frightday.com. We've got something very special there this month.
Oh, we do.
The 2018 Halloween limited edition version of the Too Cool for School shirt. It's the ghost you've all grown to love with a little pumpkin next to him.
Pretty rad.
It's a great little pumpkin. I carved it myself.
He's really cute.
Yeah, take a peek. shop.frightday.com. We also have the white on black and white classic edition. White on black.
And what is it? 1 in 25 of those do not actually have a glitter bomb inside the pizza box.
I should mention, selfishly, my clothing company is running some pretty rad October exclusives too. You should check them out.
You should check them out.
ByronMcCoy.com.
And it is other company because Fright Day is, we are actually really a company.
Legally a company.
We are. It's funny.
Very strange.
Yeah.
And if this isn't enough for you, if you find yourself craving things to put in your ear after you've listened to all 181 of these,
try the backside of stick matches first.
And then also play them in reverse. But after you do that, patreon.com/FrightDay, that's a thing. We got over 50 pieces of bonus content, shows like Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, Byron's Serial Corner, The Writer's Room, Cinema Autopsy, all kinds of stuff. Sam's got a book there. And I know that we're doing live streams there from the coast. Not only is it a great way to support us, it's a great way to experience more of us.
Ugh.
If you're experiencing
way too much of us.
Most helpful of all, leave us reviews on iTunes. That's the best way to get us inside of ears and up charts, which is important.
Or up ears and inside charts.
Technically, he's right.
I mean, I guess that's too much for me. I don't know.
Next week, Gareth Evans, one of my favorite action directors, taking a darker turn. I think you would know this guy's work. You haven't seen The Raid yet.
Nope.
One of my favorite films.
You do love it.
Standing Ovation at South by Southwest.
Heard that.
He did a little short on VHS 2.
Which one?
What is it called?
I won't know it by the name. What's it about?
You know, the one where the documentary team goes inside that place to see the cult?
The cult.
The cult.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That one is excellent.
Oh, interesting. So that's, I wonder if this is a spinoff from that even.
No, this one takes place in 1900.
Oh, okay. So it's definitely not.
Absolutely not. But it does look fantastic. We're watching Apostle.
Great.
Also on Netflix. So
hell of a month for Netflix.
Yeah, they're killing it.
Yeah, they're really packing all their punches this month.
Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Fright Day on Twitter, or you can email me, kelly@frightday.com.
I am at Sam Fright Day. Email me, sam@frightday.com.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter and Instagram. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. True Tales of Terror is coming up. Get those stories to Kelly.
Give me the stories. Get me your spooky, 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 spooky
All
stories.
All of your true tales that are terrifying.
Yep.
Kelly@FrightDay.com. And until next Friday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Stay sound. I had chili for the first time.
You're a fucking Martian.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
God, you're lucky that she tolerates that, because that's fucking weird.
Yeah, I know.
I had chili for the first time. No, that wasn't my 2-year-old daughter speaking, actually. That was Byron.
You've been listening to an Audio Wall original produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.
This is just the worst.
It's not the best.
It's not great.